Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world? So welcome, folks. Welcome to the 540th edition of SDG. This, folks, is 2022. Endgame update number 4. And then later in this message, we'll tie it all into a classic story of good versus evil. You know, the Bible says in Esther chapter 4, verse 14, at the end of that passage, and I like how the Amplified renders it, "And who knows whether you have attained royalty for such a time as this, and for this very purpose." So stay tuned to learn that as believers who Christ has made, as the Bible says in Revelation chapter 1, verse 6, both kings and priests, we have a part to play in God's story. Now, the only question is, as my pastor Todd asked us all last week, are you willing to accept it? And I'm going to add, or are you too afraid? So the bottom line, folks, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. And as God's people, we're just passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity. And stay tuned to find out the latest news that the mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, it all started with this lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as we do every week, folks, let's look at something from a past episode. And this one, we're going to just go back last week. And remember, we listened to those fascistic remarks from Justin Trudeau. You know, this graduate of the young leaders, young global leaders from the World Economic Forum. And wait till later in this message when you see who some of the other young leaders. It's crazy, folks. It's totally crazy. But let's just listen to this clip where Justin Trudeau's addressing Parliament as the trucker protest is at their pinnacle. And they're really starting to wake people up. Listen to what Justin Trudeau says in Parliament.
Emergency. So, Mr. Speaker, when did the Prime Minister lose his way? When did it happen?
You're right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, Conservative Party members can stand with people who wave swastikas. They can stand with people who wave the Confederate flag. We will choose to stand with Canadians who deserve to be able to get to their jobs, who be able to get their lives back. These illegal protests need to stop, and they will, Mr. Speaker.
I just want to remind the honourable members, including the honourable right honourable Prime Minister, to use words that are not inflammatory in the House, and that's for both sides. We have a point of order, the honourable member for Thornhill.
Mr. Speaker, I am a strong Jewish woman and a member of this House and a descendant of Holocaust survivors, and I have never made to, it's never been singled out, and I have never been made to feel less, except for today when the Prime Minister accused me of standing with swastikas. I think he owes me an apology. I'd like an apology, and I think he owes an apology to all members of this House.
So there you have it, folks. There was this game being played, and those truckers, they fought the good fight. They attained a royalty in their belief, in their faith, for a time as this, for this very purpose. Now, last weekend, unfortunately, the thugs from the UN came in. Those were what most of those enforcement, quote-unquote, officers were. So they cleared it out using very brutal
militaristic and police tactics, breaking windows, dragging people out, beating them, circling them one-on-one, one at a time, I should say, with maybe 10 of these thugs and one protester and beating them. Stories of that. So by the end of the weekend, most of it was cleared out. And then the crazy thing is the blockades that the truckers had were just replaced by blockades from the government. So at that point, the Emergency Authorities Act should have been revoked. But then on Monday in Parliament, here's what Trudeau says.
For the past few days, parliamentarians have been debating the Emergencies Act and will be voting on it tonight. I ask all members of Parliament to take action against illegal blockades and to stand up for public safety and for the freedom of Canadians. Invoking the Emergencies Act has been necessary. Law enforcement agencies relied on it to set up secured areas in downtown Ottawa and at border crossings. It prevented foreign money from continuing to fund illegal blockades, and it's making sure our borders remain open. It has been the responsible thing to do.
So there you have it. Invoking it was necessary. It was the responsible thing to do. And if I'd have continued playing that, you'd have heard him saying it is still needed. So I encourage Parliament to vote yes on continuation. Now, you know, this guy, Justin Trudeau, he's articulate, good-looking, and a graduate of the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leader School, as is most of his parliament, and you'll learn that later in this message. And before his rise to fame, his rise to power, did you know he was a school teacher? Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but he was hand-picked, folks. So then just 2 days later, after the political pressure gets insurmountable, when he realizes that he's going to lose grip of his party and possibly the entire party, listen to what happens. This is Wednesday now, 2 days later.
We were very clear that the use of the Emergencies Act would be limited in time. When we invoked it, it would be in place for up to 30 days, but we said that we would lift it as soon as possible. We've held updates and briefs with ministers and officials every day, often multiple times a day. And today, after careful consideration, we're ready to confirm that the situation is no longer an emergency. Therefore, the federal government will be ending the use of the Emergencies Act. We are
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, isn't that something, Gomer? Well, golly, you see, Trudeau didn't have enough support in the Canadian Senate to continue the Emergencies Act. His entire grip on power, which should be by the consent of the governed, was slipping away. So in order to save himself and his party politically, he caved and announced that he was revoking the acts. Folks, I'm telling you, this former school teacher has no credentials as a leader. In fact, he was even challenged by one of his hand-picked senators, Pierre Delphone turned on him on Wednesday, folks, saying that he would not vote for an act over concerns on how Trudeau was abusing his near limitless powers to violate citizens' charter rights. And that's like our Bill of Rights here in the United States. Like I've been saying from day one, folks, this has never been about public health and our safety. It's all about control. And World Economic Forum's Great Reset. You know, you got to hand it to old Klaus Schwab. He certainly knows how to orchestrate a great conspiracy to take over the world, doesn't he? Now, maybe you don't believe me. Maybe you think my words are too harsh. Maybe you think my rhetoric's too strong. Well, I hope you stay tuned and hang on till the Back to the Future segment where you're going to hear it right out of some of the horses' mouths. But right now, folks, we have to move on. And it's time for Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, folks, let's get started with the coronavirus heist.
The coronavirus SARS, COVID-19, bottle it, slamdemic, the coronavirus, it's a scamdemic, they call it the great equalizer, and say we're all in this together, except for the bankers, politicians, and powers to be, and folks, that ain't either, you or me, so let's all wake up to the coronavirus, and just say they know all their lies and mind control.
That's all we gotta do, folks, just say no. Now, you may have noticed that this entire scamdemic narrative is falling apart. Everything that we've been sharing with you here on SDG, everything that you hear from some of the other alt media has actually, that are called conspiracy theorists, has actually been proven to be true. It did come from a lab. Masks don't work. The vaccine isn't very effective, if at all. The vaccine's causing adverse health effects. Everything we've been saying is now panning out to be true. And you're starting to see the lamestream media come on board, and they have to, or they're going to lose all credibility. In fact, over the past couple of weeks, Denmark, France, Greece, Iceland, Spain, Italy, and 14 other countries have dropped mask mandates and all the scamdemic restrictions. And a lot of the countries that were saying you're going to need these vaccine passports, they're dropping that. Now, this is also happening in nearly all the states here in the U.S. And why? Truth is getting out. Did you hear about this 27-page letter sent to the CDC by 8 industrial hygienists? They sent a letter to the CDC, the NIH, and other top government officials. Now, they had 4 points in this where they were showing that the CDC guidelines for masking is flawed. First, they said that recommending an N95-type mask is inappropriate, and there's a lot of reasons for that. Folks, have you ever worn an N95 mask? I have a whole case of them over in my shop. I use them when I do body work and grinding. You want to keep those particulates out of your sinus and your nasal passage and your lungs. I mean, some of those things are actually downright deadly. So the point I'm trying to make here, folks, is that an N95 mask is inappropriate for extended wear. And the CDC has issued harmful guidance for the masking of children like we're seeing going on in schools. You know, folks, we have an IQ and we have an emotional quotient. And when you can't read facial expressions, body language, you become compromised in this area of emotional quotient. And that's happening all over the place. There's no evidence that these help at all, yet the children are still being masked. Why? To stunt their growth emotionally. And then the CDC goes on in point number 3 from these hygienists to ignore the fact that COVID-19 is primarily spread by aerosols and not droplets. Folks, aerosols go right through that mask. Droplets are stopped, of course, but it's the aerosol that spreads this lab-engineered bioweapon, the spike protein. And then finally, the CDC's position for masks used by the general public lacks proper scientific justification and creates potential harm based on false sense of security. Well, I'll go a step further than that. It's actually causing all sorts of dermatology issues, sinus issues. Dentists are even talking about all the problems people are starting to have with their teeth. Now, they also sent this letter to the scientific integrity group over at the CDC, and I think it was very good. These 8 brave people stood up and took the challenge that was issued in Esther chapter 4 verse 14 as this. They stood up. They took a risk. These brave hygienists are right and the CDC is wrong. And sometimes, folks, you just have to say, I'm not concerned about the consequences. If I'm on the side of righteousness, if I'm standing there in truth, I'm going to do it regardless of the consequences. So they took a risk and they spoke the truth. Will you? Do you? Now, I don't think the CDC is going to admit they're wrong. When's the last time you ever saw that happen? And they aren't going to accept help from these experts who know the truth, because that would be a tacit admission that they've been giving out crappy advice from day one. And that's just not going to happen either, folks. These people are control freaks. They're power hungry. And they wouldn't know truth if it stared them down in the face.
What?
That's right, folks. Now, I could share stories with you about how people have stood in righteousness, like these hygienists, like the trucker convoy. We could talk about the looming war in Ukraine, rising gas and food prices, and the continued decline, cognition of our imposter-in-chief, Joe Biden. But these are all designed to take our focus off the big picture. Now, what's the big picture? Well, stay focused here, and let's stay focused on the big picture and what's really going on, and skip all this kabuki theater. Let's do that today, okay, folks? Let's calmly and logically look into where this is all headed, okay? And you know what? We really should move on before I get into this. Our next segment, which is the Kabuki Theater Update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police report, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater. In Japanese, ka means salt, boo means dance. Ki means steal from the verb, kabu meaning to slam or display. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flattened curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or will hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all, Trump, bad, must go. Good is bad is good. Up is down, light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for Agenda 2030 and the new world order. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
So like I said, I fill this segment up with stories about the truckers' convoy, this war in Ukraine, the runaway inflation and the collapse of our economy, what's going on with Biden. But if we do that, we're going to lose focus of the big picture. So why don't we just skip Kabuki Theater this week, okay? Let's calmly and logically look into where this is all headed. Now, I say this because it's looking like God's beginning to allow the end-time scenarios prophesied in the Bible to come to pass. It looks like the Luciferians have finally started their long-planned endgame leading to the Great Reset and the Mark of the Beast. Now, folks, do you realize that what we are witnessing are the final chess moves in this globalistic strategy, this eon-planned strategy from the days of Cain and Abel, to take down world and to put their God on the throne. And that's none other than Lucifer. Now, they plan to replace us with these transhumanistic, godless, wick to the core, plastic, fake people, almost like the robots in Westworld, you know, the hosts, in order so they control everything to do. And then in return, they're going to give us the privilege to exist. Now, whenever a group of people, wicked people, conspire like this, and they get together and do these things, it's evil, folks, pure evil. And these wicked people are in the final stages of their coup. And they believe they have us in checkmate. They believe that they've neutralized every possible and conceivable opposition. But you know what I say to that? I say, baloney. I do. Because I believe that the human will, the fighting spirit of man, the righteousness of Christ in those who have surrendered at the foot of the cross is mightier than anything can throw at it. The Bible says, greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. But the truth is that right now they think they have us in checkmate, and they're no longer afraid to reveal their true nature. The mask is coming off. Look at Trudeau last week. Look at what's going on with Putin right now. And they're bearing their authoritarian, totalitarian fangs, so to speak, okay? And they're proud of it. You know, at this point, they're no longer worried about elections. Oh, what a quaint thought, huh? Plus, they're not too concerned about these peaceful protests, you know, where people like you and me flood the streets. You know, this is going to happen in a few days there at the trucker convoy in D.C. I think that's a great big setup, in my opinion. And I think they're going to try to do a false flag there. They're going to do whatever they have to implement their new world order strategy, now being called the Great Reset. You know, it changes the names over time. It used to be, what was it, Agenda 2030, and before that they had another one, I forget what it was. But they're going to use whatever they have to, pandemics, bioweapons, climate change hysteria, cyber attacks, false flags, even war, whatever it takes to finalize the destruction of Western Christian civilization. They hate God, folks. Remember the numbers from Deagle 2025? Do you remember? I've been talking about that for probably the last 10 years here on these podcasts. And I just called up a clip that we've played here several times. It's a very good synopsis. It's 3 minutes, 41 seconds, and it basically tells you about Deagle 2025, which now has been taken down off the web. And thank God for all the people who have archived it.
What will happen in 2025? An international forecasting website, Deagle.com, published an interactive graph where it projects future prospects or trends for any nation in the world that you click on. Although the graph has been updated since 2013, their site currently charts changes in population, GDP, and other national factors of almost every country in the world from 2017 to 2025, allowing you to easily cross-compare the statistics. They forecast that from 2017 to 2025, the United States population will be cut down to less than a third of its size, from 327 million to 100 million, while the UK is whittled down to almost a sixth of its 2017 size, 66 million to 15 million. France loses nearly half of their population, while Germany is inexplicably trimmed down from 81 million to 28 million. During this same stretch of time, China and Russia are projected to maintain the same population, while India and Brazil grow by a few million more people. Why are populations dramatically disappearing in such a short amount of time? And why 2025? Deagle's forecast says that the U.S.'s GDP will fall from $19 trillion to $1.6 trillion, less than a tenth of its former self from 2017. The U.K. drops from $2.9 trillion to $132 billion, while Canada, France, and Germany follow suit, dropping from the trillions to the hundreds of billions in GDP. However, China and Russia are expected to grow their GDP by $1 trillion and over $2 trillion, respectively, while Brazil maintains a stable GDP at $3.2 trillion and India loses only $2 trillion of its projected $7.3 trillion. The defense budget for each Western nation follows the same trend, a sharp drop in the billions. While as predictably predicted by Deagle.com, China, Russia, India, and Brazil increase their defense budget in the double and triple digit billions, clearly showing a major shift in national military power worldwide. Countries associated with the Economic Development Group known as BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China, arrive in a future with greater population stability, a growing GDP, and a booming defense budget. Why does Deagle predict such a bleak 2025 for North America and Europe? Little is known about the owners of Deagle.com, but according to their own website, Deagle is partners with and clients of the NSA, NATO, the World Bank, the United Nations, and other national and international agencies. They say the economic and demographic data used in the making of their forecasts is widely available by institutions such as the CIA, IMF, UN, and USG. Also, they make it clear that they are, quote, not linked to any government in any way, shape, or form. Either way, what will happen in 2025? And why do multiple other publications predict 2025 to be a tumultuous year? This is Brian Wilson with Infowars.com.
So why these reductions in the West's population, GDP, and spending budgets? Well, in one word, folks, war. And this is all justified in the eyes of these Luciferians so they can build back better on the ashes of the once great Western Christian civilizations, you know, of North America and Europe. Demoniacs, when these totalitarian control freaks tell you who they are and what they're going to do, we need to believe them. And it looks like what they're planning on doing is using the BRIC nations that's Brazil, Russia, India, and China, to create their new world, what do you want to call it, plantation, global plantation, where we'll all own nothing and be happy. So they believe that after more than 75 years of their cultural Marxist propaganda, attacking the education system, the governments, the philosophy, the very culture of Western society, they believe that this once dominant civilization founded on the Judeo-Christian ethics and morality of the Bible has grown weak and soft. And you know, really, honestly, folks, that's true. In short, they smell blood in the water like a shark, and they're ready to pounce. This is their time. But remember, folks, remember and never forget, we were made kings and priests unto God. That's what the Bible says. And who knows whether you have attained royalty in your faith in Jesus Christ for such a time as this, and for this very purpose, to stand up and say no. So in short, folks, as I've been reporting to you over the last 2 years during this scamdemic, it's being used as a tool in this Operation Lockstep that was outlined by Rockefeller back in 2010 in that document that we've covered ad nauseum. It's even in my video clip that went viral with Dr. Tenpenny, you know, the coronavirus heist rap. And they're doing this to accomplish two things right now. They need their global digital ID system, which will end up being the mark of the beast, and their global digital money system, which will then be linked to your social credit score. And if you don't do what they say, they'll wipe it clean. You know, they'll wipe their slate clean like they did with those truckers up there and anybody who supported them. They just went in and took their bank accounts. So these are being used as hammers of sort to facilitate their great reset and force people around the world into this biblical mark of the beast system. Now, many of you may be saying, well, I just don't believe it. But you know what? All you have to do is wake up and look around. Ask the Lord to give you sight and light in the spirit realm to see what I'm talking about. Now, as I'm seeing this come together, this beast system closely resembles what Hitler did in the Third Reich. Now, this is ultimately the Fourth Reich, but it's going to be much more diabolical, much more controlling than Hitler could have ever imagined. And why? Because today we have all this technology. AI spies on us, and even now it's beginning to predict our thoughts. Remember some of those movies that came out with some of the action hero actors? I forget the names. The Bourne Conspiracy, the Minority Report, and some of those other things. That is becoming reality. Plus, now they have gene editing and this mRNA technology. They believe are the superhumans, you know? What Hitler was trying to achieve, void of any human compassion or even the ability to think critically and independently. Plus, they're trying to destroy our ability to believe. There's this little portion of your brain by your, I think it's by your right temple, but don't quote me on that. And it's the portion of your brain that allows you to believe. It gives us the ability to put our hands up in the air and say, forsaking all, I trust him. And they're trying to quench that. They're trying to destroy it. It was even brought up in Westworld Season 3, Episode 1. And I'm going to have to see if I can bring that clip up and play it for you. So orders are going to be given. And these orders given by these control freaks must be followed. Now, the troublesome folks out there like you and me, those that still have our free wills intact, those that still have our cognitive abilities functioning, those of us who still have the pure, true blood of humanity, they're going to do everything they can to stamp us out. They're going to deal very harshly with whoever remains. They're going to call us troublemakers. And that's going to be cheered by the masses who have been brainwashed, genetically modified, poisoned by the food, those who have joined this cult via mass formation psychosis. Folks, believe me when I tell you this beast system is at our doorsteps. If you hear an urgency in my voice right now, if you hear me almost pleading with you, I am. I'm imploring you.
I'm crying out to you. You have to stand up. You have to say no. You have to resist. And if we don't, we're going to be swept along. Now, in light of what's gone down in Canada last weekend, now with this war in Europe, it's so much clearer to me than it was even 2 months ago. Globalists think they're in the final end game. That's why I've titled these updates End Game Update. You know, they want to scare the heck out of the people. They want to mind numb them with all of this stupid entertainment and the news. And it's all done under a control grid, folks. They use fear to lock us down and strip away our rights and freedoms. They're demonizing anyone who isn't afraid from fear porn. You know, fear is false evidence about reality. So if you're not afraid about the virus or the war and want to just go on living as you always did, you're going to be ostracized. You're going to be demonized. Well, aren't you afraid? Look what they're doing to the poor Ukrainians. That's only half the truth, folks. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. You know, after a year and a half of wearing people down with all this propaganda and take away their freedoms, they think they're ready to step in now and offer the final solution. This is nothing but problem, reaction, solution. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. Ordo ab chao. And now, this is where the real deception kicks in. Yeah, I thought it couldn't get any worse. It can, folks. Now, here's how they're going to achieve that. They're going to let the docile, mind-numbed people who have been worn down buy back some limited freedoms. And how they're going to do this? By submission to their dictates. So what they're going to do is they're going to give you this card or this chip in your hand or forehead that enables you to buy and sell, enables you to move around. As long as you do what they say, as long as you follow their dictates. Now, they always start with, oh, these are just temporary necessities. You know, just 15 days to flatten the curve. Remember all that BS? But they never go away. That's all a lie. They're never temporary. They are meant to reorder every facet of our lives, including the freedom movement that we're in right now. They are manipulating that. If you look at the people behind some of these marches, some of these convoys, they're none other than the people that are preparing our prison camps. Ordo ab chao, controlled opposition. You know, they are even going to tell us where we can work and what we can say and what we can eat, how we worship God, and even what gets injected into our bodies, which are temples of the Holy Spirit. Plus, everything's being monitored now. Everything's being assessed and digitized and predicted by AI. And how are they doing this? Through all these apps on our smartphones, folks. The most important thing is to do not enable location identity and any sort of histories on your smartphone. Don't give them that option. And shut off Siri. Shut off all of those digital voice attendants. Do anything you can. Dumb down that smartphone. You do not want all that tracking information. You do not want all of that monitoring. And you can do some of that. And I heard there's some phones coming out by some of these other patriotic type networks that don't have those options. So I'm looking into that. And if I find anything there, I'll share it with you. But my bottom line to you is don't submit and give these elitist control freaks rights over your body and the reordering of your life. Now, if you resist, they're going to declare you a non-citizen, a terrorist, and claim you have no rights. Look at what they did to those freedom fighters up in Canada last weekend. Now, you may be a red-blooded American-born citizen. You may have fought in a war. You may be loyal to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but none of that matters anymore, folks. It's all been bypassed and rendered moot by these endless crises. They're looking for global citizens who are willing to join their new world order. The Great Reset. Fourth Reich, whatever you want to call it, is really like a cult. You have to follow their dictates and their quote-unquote science that really has no connection to true science, folks. And believe me, I know this because that's my discipline. Remember when Fauci said, I am science? You know, he says anybody who contradicts me is contradicting science. Do you remember that? I think I have that clip here. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, Fauci is science and science is truth. Listen to this. It's just 53 seconds.
Attacks on me, quite frankly, are attacks on science. Because all of the things that I have spoken about consistently from the very beginning have been fundamentally based on science. Sometimes those things were inconvenient truths for people, and there was pushback against me. So if you are trying to, you know, get at me as a public health official and a scientist, you're really attacking not only Dr. Anthony Fauci, you're attacking science. And anybody that looks at what's going on clearly sees that. You have to be asleep not to see that. That is what's going on. Science and the truth are being attacked, as attacks on me, quite frankly, are attacks on science. Because all of the...
Stage button.
Yeah.
Stage button.
Yeah, you know what? Even old Hills in the Air, Kamala Harris, she's laughing at that one, huh? So they want to make people like Fauci and Gates and Klaus Schwab these new gods. And they want to have this new pantheon of the gods. And to get with the program, you have to do what you're told. And you hear comments from people, the mind-numb, brain-dead, blue-pilled people saying, why don't those truckers just do what they're told? Folks, I've actually seen that kind of talk out on social media. They believe these diabolical control freaks, these Luciferians, believe they can implement this system now because they've spent the last 50 to 75 years infiltrating society with people like these graduates of the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leader School. And we're going to get into more of that in the Back to the Future segment. And wait till you hear the clip from Klaus Schwab in this episode of Back to the Future. Now, whether people agree with them or not, many, for no other reason than to keep their jobs and the status quo of their lifestyle so they could pay their bills and stay in that house, that McMansion that they really don't own, you know, the bank owns it. And they're not never going to own it because they have a mortgage that goes out 30 years. And when they get near to paying it off, they refinance it with a home equity loan. And I know people who are in retirement still paying their second and third mortgages off, folks. They're nothing but laborers, slaves on the company plantation. You know, people in general have lost their ability or courage to think critically as individuals and just say no and do what's right, story that we're going to go over at the end of this episode. They'd rather do what's convenient. They'd rather do what gets them to maintain status quo as long as they can. Now, none of this could have been done 20 or 30 years ago because the power centers within society were still too diffuse, too separate. And our founding fathers actually structured that in our government that way. You know, the separation of powers, the three branches of government, and then we had state, local, and federal on top of that. Well, everything's being consolidated now. Not just government, but the major industries, the media, medical services, banking, financial services, transportation, everything. And they are all being controlled at the very top by these same Kabbalists, these globalists, these Luciferians. Now, if you do your research, you'll find that all the biggest corporations in the world are owned or controlled by that same elite group of people. You know, you've heard BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, just to name a few. These groups control massive amounts of money, most of which they got through these TARP bailouts back in 2008, and now all of this stimulus money. So at this level, they have literally a monopoly over money, and they're buying up every asset they can right now, folks. They're trying to get their control into every little facet of our lives. And that's because they want control. They want to tell you what to think, when to sleep, when to eat, what to eat. And they don't even care about productivity and work anymore. They're going to give you a universal basic income. But these incomes are all going to be dependent upon your submission and your compliance to their plan. And that's the way it works. And that's their end game. So don't lose sight of these goals. Digital money, global ID, fake meat, self-driving electric cars. And it's in just about every movie now. And even obedient churches that are going to create these obedient global citizens in the Fourth Reich through this global reset. And for those of you and like you and me who aren't obedient, those like you and me who are unwilling to join this new authoritarian system, those of us who reject the lies of these corporate media lackeys, we're going to be increasingly ostracized day by day, week by week, month by month, demonized and singled out for punishment. How are they going to punish us? They're going to try to shame us. They're going to take our bank accounts. And if none of that works, they're going to come and literally kill you. I'm telling you, folks, this is Matthew 24 on steroids, but it's in real time. And I think we're past the point of no return. Called wrong. Deception is going to rule. Persecution will be rampant. They're going to trample believers. They're going to target us, folks, and they're going to try to destroy us. But praise the Lord, this won't last long. We know that. So I'm imploring you to keep the faith and prepare. Just prepare. Put on your spiritual game face, folks, and stand fast till the end. Now, enough said on that. And you know, I read an article by Leo Holman, and that kind of inspired me. So thank you, Leo. But now it's time to move on. I do want to cover one or two things in Kabuki Theater just to show you what I've been talking about here in this monologue. And I'm sorry I was so long-winded, folks. But I'm very passionate about this. You know, I got to hold it together right now. For whatever reason, when I was a little kid, the Lord woke me up, and I just knew things weren't right. Like, in a free country, why do we have to give the government a big chunk of what we earn? In a free country, why am I not allowed to travel somewhere like to Cuba? These things, I'm talking as a teenager. I used to question this stuff. So I'm different for whatever reason. But I hope you can see what they're doing here. So I'd like to show you one of the mainstream media reports. This was just out on the 25th from Good Morning America. It's a minute and 50-second clip. Let's listen to it. And this is just how they're spinning the war.
Terry Moran there in Ukraine. Terry, you are seeing a real shift in how folks on the ground are preparing for what could come.
We are, Cecilia. Civil defense preparations are really accelerating. The U.S. government has expressed concern about how ready they were, but from kids learning first aid and bomb shelters being prepared to the government putting out maps of where those shelters are, you do see a seriousness of purpose now, and they need it this morning. Russia keeping up the pressure, heavy shelling along that front line of that long simmering conflict in eastern Ukraine between Russian armed separatists and the Ukrainian government. Today there was most shelling in months, we are told. No report of injuries or deaths at this time, but it is clearly an escalation, and that worries the U.S. government, because one of the things they are concerned about is that what looks to be now a deliberate escalation in that conflict could be used as a justification for Vladimir Putin to attack. Meanwhile, Putin himself is meeting with the leader of Belarus today. Those two are concluding their massive joint exercises just north of the border here. All this, of course, has Ukrainians on edge. Polls showing that Ukrainians now are really beginning to take seriously the conflict, although there's a lot of people who still, perhaps out of wishful thinking, think this is just Russia trying to intimidate them. Tomorrow, Putin will oversee tests of ballistic missiles in Russia, another show of might and defiance. Michael?
All right, Terry, definitely has Ukraine on edge and then everyone around the world as well. Thank you so much.
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos here.
Okay, enough there. So that's the way the media is reporting it. But did you hear about this? It came out two evenings ago. It's a snippet from the speech that Putin gave. And, folks, I need to say this. Putin is a brilliant strategist. But that doesn't mean I like him. That doesn't mean he's a good man. He just knows how to move the pieces around on the chessboard. That's all it means. But I would like to share this with you. Okay? It opens up, and I'm beginning the quote now. So begin quote. Citizens of Russia, friends, I consider it necessary to speak again about the topic of the events in Donbass and the key aspects of the ensuing security of Russia. I'll begin with what I said in my address on February 21st. I spoke about our biggest concerns and worries and about the fundamental threats which irresponsible Western politicians created for Russia consistently, rudely, and unceremoniously from year to year. I'm referring to the eastward expansion of NATO, which is moving its military infrastructures ever closer to the Russian border. It is a fact that over the past 30 years, we have been patiently trying to come to an agreement with the leading NATO countries regarding the principles of equal and indivisible security in Europe. And folks, this is all true. This goes all the way back to Gorbachev and Reagan and the tearing down of the Berlin Wall. And there were promises made by the U.S. and the NATO countries they did not keep. So I continue with this quote. In response to our proposals, we invariably faced either cynical deception or lies or attempts at pressure and blackmail. While the North Atlantic Alliance continued to expand despite our protests and concerns, its military machine is moving and, as I said, is approaching our very border. Now, let me cut in here and comment on that, too. To the south, when you study history and you look at what happened in World War II when Hitler moved against Russia, there's a 1,000-mile plain in southern Ukraine that leads to this portion of Russia known as Astrakhan that literally has all of their gas and oil production. The entire country of Russia is dependent upon that. So if NATO ever wanted to move across that indefensible plain, they could literally cut out Russia's energy supply with a blitzkrieg-type move Hitler did. It'd be very easy. And then to the north in the Baltic states, you have Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. That's very close to St. Petersburg, and they're all NATO countries now. So there is a legitimate concern about this NATO military machine that's moving and approaching Russia's border from Putin, and I'm almost done. Why is this happening? Where did this insolent manner of taking down from the height of their exceptionalism, infallibility, and all permissiveness come from? What is the explanation for this contemptuous and disdainful attitude to our interests, that's Russia's interests, and absolutely legitimate demands? End quote. Folks, did you hear about any of this on the news? Did anybody talk about this in any of their commentaries on the major media networks and cable news networks? Bottom line, folks, Putin, good, bad, evil, nice, ugly, whatever you want to call the guy, Putin doesn't want NATO and its missiles in Ukraine. Now, Newsmax reported on some of this, but I didn't hear it anywhere else. I didn't. So bottom line, Putin is willing to have a ceasefire. And here's how mainstream media is reporting on that. Now, why do you think that is? So we're all afraid of the boogeyman. I'm telling you, folks, the situation is grave because of the people in control in Washington, D.C. They want a war. They want this country to be nuked. And that's probably why Deagle forecasted these massive population reductions in Europe and then some fairly significant ones over in the U.S. I suspect that these neoconservatives, these Trump-hating establishment hacks, this deep state team that was being led by Hillary Clinton before she was defeated in 2016, want to see this country destroyed. And I'm not just talking economically or politically. I'm talking physically. They want to see this country nuked. So the situation is grave, but then I need to show you something. So stay tuned, and we're going to get behind the scenes in our Back to the Future episode. But right now, folks, I have to keep moving. It's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta. In this episode, or in this segment, where are you, Henrietta? There she is. Okay, now stay on the paper because you're not housebroken. I let you in here for this show every week just so you can cluck. Okay, so she's clucked, and we're ready to get into prepping. So you know what we do in this segment, folks. We prepare. And last week we talked about on the show, we talked about the whistleblower, Dr. Yu. She's the whistleblower who warned us about the SARS-CoV-2 attack and how it was a bioweapon engineered in the laboratory released at the military games in the fall of 2019 when event 201 was happening at Johns Hopkins. So that warning was aired early in 2020 on Fox News, and we played it here like that very week. And she told us in that warning that it was bioengineered in the lab, and the media was manipulating it, and it was a plan for facilitation of the Great Reset. And some of that was my commentary. And then just last week, we heard from Dr. Yu again, where she claims that the second wave of the unconventional warfare, this bio attack, this non-conventional war, is happening right now. We're in the midst of it. And she claims that another bioengineered, what do you want to call it, weapon was released at the Beijing Winter Olympics, and that's hemorrhagic fever. Now, its incubation time's significantly longer, 3 to 4 weeks, and her position is that these athletes are going to get back into their communities seemingly normal, and then all of a sudden it's going to hit, and by that time they have spread it. So we're going to have to wait and see. That's going to be another week or two. But it's the same protocol that they've been using. So why do I have this in Coop Talk with Henrietta? Well, there's this doctor named Dr. Williams, and he has a website called drwilliams.com. I'm sorry, drjewilliams.com. So Dr. J is in James, E is in Edward, Williams.com. If you go out there, you're going to see that he talks about longevity and living the good life and living to 100 years plus. And I'm not talking in a wheelchair or in a bed with a catheter tube and, you know, hoses hooked up to your nose. No, he's talking about a good, healthy life. And he claims this can be done by maintaining your level of this compound called NAD+. Nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. It's a coenzyme that's necessary for health and longevity. Now, why am I talking about this? Well, as it turns out, this NAD+, which is necessary for healthy life and, you know, vitality, I should say, our body produces it from two dietary nutrients, primarily niacin and this amino acid named tryptophan. But as we age, our NAD plus levels decline, so we have to supplement them. And the cycle, and I'm not going to get into all the science. If you're interested in that, and it is really cool, if you're interested in that, go out to his website. But this NAD plus, what it does is it regulates or manages this bad molecule known as CD38. Now, overproduction of CD38 is a bad thing. It's like, you know, free radicals are in your body. And if you have overproduction of CD38, cause all sorts of problems. So the CD38 is necessary, but you have to keep it from getting too high. And the he proposes we do this is by increasing NAD plus in our bodies and decreasing CD38 production. Now, you're probably scratching your head now and saying, that's great, Ken, but we're in the middle of a war. You're talking about these bioreleases. Well, here's where it gets really interesting. It appears that the same process that the bioweapon causing hemorrhagic fever, the same process is what's used in aging. And if you manage this NAD plus level in your body, you can regulate your CD38 levels and possibly use healthy immune system with the proper levels of NAD plus to fight off hemorrhagic fever. And there's also a drug that's produced by Johnson & Johnson, an anti-cancer drug, that appears to do the same thing. But let's today just talk about foods high in some of these compounds necessary elevate your level of NAD plus in your body. And there's basically five compounds found in these foods: taxifolin, apigenin, lutenol, calostephin, and Kuromanin, and I probably butchered all those pronunciations. But you can eat foods that are high in that, like black. A lot of the foods are dark or purple in color. So black plums, black raspberries, black rice, black oranges, blueberries, choke cherries, Concord grapes, purple corn, red cabbage, red raspberries, red onions. And additionally, we can take resveratrol. He recommends 100 milligrams a day and a few other compounds like coenzyme Q10. So folks, I encourage you to go out and check out Dr. Williams' website. And if you can't find it, email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com and I'll get you the information. But right now, folks, we have to move on. And it's time for our Hopium Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
You know, Carrie Lake is on fire, folks. Last week or the week before, we played that clip where she just ripped that reporter from 60 Minutes Australia to shreds. And it wasn't even the interview. It was what happened after the interview. Well, she's released this campaign ad, and based on the regulations, Carrie Lake, let me see if I can call that up. So she released this campaign ad, and by FCC regulations concerning candidates, it must be aired. So all of the news networks aired this in the Phoenix news system during their newscasts, all except one. Listen to this ad.
Hi, Arizona. I'm Carrie Lake, the Trump-endorsed candidate for governor. If you're watching this ad right now, it means you're in the middle of watching a fake news program. You know how to know it's fake? Because they won't even cover the biggest story out there, the rigged election of 2020. And rigged elections have consequences. We're all feeling it. Soaring prices, a spike in homelessness, and an invasion on our border. I'm the only candidate with a plan to tackle all of those issues and more. When I'm governor, we'll finish the wall, and criminals who cross our border will be sent back. We'll get the homeless out of our parks and off our streets, and no more masks, swabs, or shots to go to work or go to school. Our kids will get a real education, not a brainwashing. To see where I stand on all the issues, go to carrielake.com. Now let's send the corrupt news a lesson and turn them off.
Carrie Lake for governor.
So Carrie Lake was endorsed by President Trump, and that probably triggered a lot of these left-wing media types and talking heads to get into their Trump derangement syndrome because she was endorsed by Trump. But I'm telling you, she dropped a bombshell there in this Phoenix viewing area. And she was interviewed by One America's Christina Robb, or Bob. And I'd just like to play a snippet of that interview and let you hear Carrie Lake, in her own words, explain what the purpose of that was. This is a 2 minute and 26
Carrie Lake, gubernatorial candidate for Arizona, you came out with a hard ad against the fake news in Arizona airing during the news hour. What prompted you to take on the news like this, being a journalist yourself?
You know, I don't think a lot of people are actually watching the fake news. I know their ratings have plummeted, but I want to reach those people who are still watching and being brainwashed by the fake news. And I want to hit them with some cold, hard facts about our stolen election, our rigged election. And so I decided because of FCC rules, as a candidate, they cannot refuse my ad. I'll take the fight right in to their playground, and we will actually let the people know what's going on. So my ad talks about the consequences. It's called Rigged Elections Have Consequences. And of course, because we have Joe Biden in the White House right now and he's destroying this country, we're seeing inflation that is soaring and really affecting people in the pocketbook. We're also seeing a border that's out of control with people coming across, criminals and drugs. And we're seeing a homeless problem here in Arizona skyrocketing, and we're on the verge of becoming like California, a state with a bunch of dead, hollowed-out cities. I have a plan to solve all those problems, but I will continue to bring the fight right into the fake news.
And you make the point in your advertisement that the fake news refuses to talk about the stolen election, and the rigged election or the lack of transparency in the election could potentially solve all of the other problems that you're discussing. If there hadn't been a rigged election, would we have a border crisis? Would we have gas prices going through the roof? Would we have inflation? How important is the election story to you as a former journalist?
I think it is the most important story possibly of our lifetime. And when people, when I'm out campaigning, people say, Carrie, which news can we trust? Which one isn't fake? And I always say, look at how they're covering the election. If they're calling it a solid election and it was honest, or calling the audit a fraud, then they're fake news. And it hurts because some of the people on some of these stations, you know, the people the public likes. But if they are not covering this stolen, rigged election, then they are fake news, period.
Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake, thank you for your time.
And that was a mouthful of truth, folks. If they're not talking about what actually happened in election 2020, they are fake news. You know, in my little county here, and you've heard this over and over, we have 70,000 people in this county. And I was following the election on Real Clear Politics, and they give you these election poll results. So I went to bed. I woke up the next morning, and there were nearly 20,000 votes for Trump gone from my little county of 70,000 people. So during the election last year, I asked the woman, I said, do you know about it? She goes, absolutely, we all do. I said, well, what's going on? And she walked me over to the election machine we have, and it's one of those, yeah, and it was plugged in to the internet. She said, see this wire here? It's not supposed to be plugged in. I told my boss that, and she said, don't unplug it, or you'll be in big trouble. You'll get fired. She said, you need to take this up with your state rep. So I tried. Nothing happened. But anyways, let's move on. It's time for our Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
Okay, folks, what I'd like to do in this segment is share one absurd clip of Bill Gates. Now, there's plenty of absurd clips with Bill Gates, but this was during a CNBC interview, and journalist Hadley Beal asks this question to the sage Bill Gates. Remember, this guy is a college dropout whose daddy had big bucks, call him Daddy Warbucks, who helped his boy start a company that stole code from other companies. Don't even get me going on that. And then because of an agenda became Microsoft. But journalist Haley Beal, if you want to even call her a journalist, asked this question. What about masks? I think there are a lot of people in America who are confused about whether they should be wearing a mask. And in the United Kingdom, for example, they've scrapped that altogether. And I'd like you to hear Bill Gates's response, and I hope you see why it's in the Absurdian Report.
What about masks? I think there are a lot of people in America who are confused about whether they should be wearing a mask, and in the United Kingdom, for example, they've scrapped that altogether.
Well, that's interesting. You know, what is the downside of wearing a mask? I mean, it's got to be tough. You know, you have to wear pants. I mean, this is tough stuff. These societies are so cruel. Why do they make you wear pants? I'm trying to figure it out.
We're very glad you have yours on.
That will be on the web. For sure, will be on the web.
Well, let's yuck it up, folks. You know, it's non sequitur. It's a stupid, fallacious argument. We don't breathe through our asses, folks, and pardon my harshness here, but we do breathe through our mouth. We do breathe through our noses. And when you cover up that or those orifices designed to bring in fresh air, cause all sorts of problems. And then we talked earlier about the emotional quotient and the fact that you can't read facial expressions, which are a major portion of body language. Oh, come on. But folks, if you didn't see the absurdity there, then you need to wake up. Hey, we have to keep moving. Right now, time for Ken's Corner, spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
Now, you know I talk over and over about the love of money being the root of all evil. Well, there's this massive money printing that's been going on now for quite some time. And it just didn't start now. I mean, it's been going on for a very long time since the Federal Reserve hijacked our gold standard and then Nixon took us off of it totally. So we've entered this new phase in the evolution of the decline of the dollar, the devaluation, the collapse of the dollar. And it's this massive inflation. And you can see the Biden regime try to respond to inflation. Now I think they're calling it Putinflation. Remember the first phase, there was denial. They said it wasn't real and it was just all the conservatives trying to use it as political opposition against the Biden agenda. Remember that? We were trying to use the scare of inflation to stir up the masses. It was all political. And then they had a backstep and admit that inflation was only half real. You know, some prices had risen radically, but that wasn't really inflation. There were forces in the supply chain that were forcing this, and it was mostly transitory. It was only on specific products, and it was all related to the supply chain. Remember that one time he was sitting in the fake Oval Office and he had the container ships out the window? Yeah, they just teleported the Oval Office over the big port in Los Angeles. Yeah, that's what they did. So it wasn't really inflation. It was just a supply chain issue. But folks, none of that ever really made sense. And I'm going to take one specific example. Let's talk about used cars. Think about it. Supply chains weren't supplying the chips. So the demand for used cars went up because people couldn't get new cars and they weren't trading in their new cars. So everybody focused on that. Now, in a part, that's true. But the part they're not telling you is that every other item, every other component in the manufacture of that car, from raw materials like steel to finished products like the paint and all the chemicals that go into that paint, have gone up radically. We just haven't seen it in the new car prices yet because the demand for the new cars aren't there because there aren't chips. But wait until the chip supplies freed up and then the cars start to move. You know, a lot of these manufacturers like Ford and Chrysler and General Motors, they're idling plants right now and they're sitting on all sorts of holding inventory of some of these raw materials. So they probably haven't seen the new prices yet. But you wait until those plants fire up and they have to order steel for the fenders and the doors and the bodies of the cars, and they have to order the paint. And they have to order all the rubber components and the upholstery and all that. Folks, I do that every day in my plant. And I'm seeing the price increases. So the Biden administration and the fake media have been using all these different things as scapegoats. And then they went to corporate greed. That's the cause of inflation. But think about that for a minute. After Biden stole the office, the corporations just said, we're going to get really greedy. And they weren't greedy under President Trump. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy, folks. That's not what happened. So the bottom line is that when you have a fiat money system, it has a finite lifetime. And we're at the end of that right now. Greed just didn't suddenly stir its ugly head. Greed's always there. It's human nature. So now they turned to Putin, and just on CBS News, I think it was on Wednesday, they declared, and I'm going to quote, the U.S. economy has been hit with increased gas prices, inflation, and supply chain issues due to the Ukrainian crisis.
Really?
That's right, Alvin, really. You know, hats off to this goofiness by the establishment, the audacity they have. Did you know that inflation hit a 40-year record high last month? And that was before Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. I'm telling you, folks, we are being lied to. Now, years ago, I read a book titled The Fourth Turning. And I've told you over and over and over again that my mentor, Bill Cooper, was a huge factor in me learning the truth. Now, I don't think we covered The Fourth Turning. It's actually titled The Fourth Turning, American Prophecy, What the Cycles of History Tell Us About America's Next Rendezvous with Destiny. This was written back in 97. I think I saw it on one of his bulletin boards, and he had one named Major Domo, and we'd have a lot of really good discussions there. This was written by William Strauss and Neil Howe. Now, what they do is they talk about the changes or the cycles or the turnings in history, and they typically go in these 80-year cycles. And the reason they use 80 years is they said within 80 years, you have essentially four generations of 20 years each. You have the youth. You have the young adults, so 0 to 20, 20 to 40. You have the middle agers, 40 to 60. And then you have the elderly, 60 to 80. And each of these generations look at what's happening differently. You know, the 80-year-olds, the 60-year-olds, they have experience. Folks, I'm in that group now. I just turned 60. So I have a lifetime of experience behind me. I know how ugly war is. I know what's happened to our dollar. I know what freedom was. And then let's wind the clock back to that first generation, the 0 to 20-year-olds. Well, they're just too young to even follow the news. But let's look at those 20 to 40-year-olds. They're clueless. They don't understand any of this because they haven't lived it. And that's what the fourth turning's built upon. So the fourth turning, they offer bold predictions about how all of us can prepare individually and collectively for our next rendezvous with destiny. And I'd like to just share a couple quotes from it. Here's one quote from the book. The risk of catastrophe will be very high. The nation could erupt into insurrection or civil violence, crack up geographically, or succumb to the authoritarian rule. If there is a war, and that's where we're at right now, we're on the precipice, it is likely to be one of maximum risk and effort. In other words, a total war. Every fourth turning has registered an upward ratchet in the technology of destruction and in mankind's willingness to use it. Now, I want to comment here, folks. Everybody's thinking that we may be nuked, and we may be. But I think more devastation will be unleashed upon us by cyber warfare than nukes could ever do. Think about it. In World War I, we had the gassing with mustard gas in the trenches. In World War II, we had the nukes at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. In World War III, I think it's going to be cyber war. So you can have these hackers from Russia hack our power grid. You can have them hack our water supply. You can have them hack our financial systems, our telecoms. And if you did that to an advanced technical society like the United States, you would have chaos from the East Coast to the West Coast and everywhere in between. In fact, the only people that would survive are going to be the preppers, the people who can get off the grid. You know, Terry and I have our own gas supply, our own electricity supply, our own water supply. And not only do we have a deep well, folks, we have three headwaters here on this property. So I have springs, fresh, clear spring water coming out three different places on this property. We have land to grow our food. We have chickens. We have preparations to have rabbit hutches on our new chicken coop. Folks, those are the only people that will survive. I want to continue with another quote from Strauss and Howe in The Fourth Turning. In this quote, he says, history offers no guarantees. Obviously, things could go horribly wrong. The possibilities ranging from a nuclear exchange to incurable plagues, from terroristic anarchy to high-tech dictatorship. Sounds like what's going on right now, doesn't it? Remember, this was written in 97. We should not assume that Providence will always exempt our nation from the irreversible tragedies that have overtaken so many others. Not just temporary hardship, but debasement and total ruin. Losing the next fourth turning could mean something incomparably worse. It could mean a lasting defeat from which our national innocence, perhaps even our nation, might never recover. Now, remember what the Deagle Report showed, folks. And remember how Strauss and Howe breaks society down into four generations. And remember what's happening now, folks. This is all coming together. I'd like to share one more quote before we move on. And this was from The Fourth Turning again. The ancients believed that each cyclical extreme, mirroring the hopes and fears of the other, helps generate the other. The nights long for day and the day longs for night. In war, people yearn for relief from strife, leading to peace. In peace, people yearn to champion what they love, leading to war. That's powerful, folks. That's very powerful. Now, personally, I think we've had a fall from grace. And I've said this for years. We've allowed these 9 black-robed, self-appointed priests in the highest court of the land, call them the supremes, to define redefine our Christian values. You know, we're being forced to believe that marriage can be between any two people, and soon it's going to be any two things. You can marry a potato, you can marry your cow, you can marry your dog, and folks, that's coming. You wait and see. So they're telling us what we can and cannot believe, and they're telling us that faith is something that it truly isn't. Then couple that with the perversion that's coming out of Hollywood and all the programming on cable news networks and the traditional 3, you know, ABC, NBC, and CBS, plus all the indoctrination in our government schools. And what we've done over the last 3 or 4 generations is produce this ever-increasingly irreverent generation upon generation of these facile, idiotic perverts. And they've been released upon our culture. Folks, did you hear what happened in France at a church last week? One of these TikTok influencers wearing a crop top, you know, one of those cut-off T-shirts and really short shorts. Actually, him and his buddy got in there and started all these lascivious sexual dances and simulated homosexual acts in front of the crucifix on the side altar in the Church of St. Paul in Paris. Folks, I'm telling you, our youth have lost their souls, their lamps, which the Bible says, the spirit of man is the lamp of the Lord, which gives light to the heart or illuminates the heart. It's in Proverbs. Read it, folks. But their lamps are out. They have no direction. They've lost their souls. They're brain dead. They're running on fumes. And, you know, their parents have very little discernment either. Have you heard about this new technology or this new group out there called Vaxteen? It's encouraging teenagers and children in schools to receive vaccinations without parental consent. And the CDC is actually supporting this group and giving guidelines. Now, it's very deceiving because you look behind it and you see that it's being funded by Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline, and all the big pharma. But nobody has discernment. People trust the government and the education system for all that's important, for their safety, for advice, for what they should do, what they shouldn't do. And it's really crazy, folks. You know, for 30 years, I've been screaming about the government schools and public education. And people say, well, you just hate people to be educated. No, I don't. I want you to be educated. For with knowledge comes wisdom. And then when you have wisdom, you can stand up for what's right. As for a time like this, what I'm against is brainwashing. You know, folks, people don't even understand anymore, and that's really sad. But I have to keep moving. I'm looking at a clock here, and I'm running out of time. And right now, it's time for Back to the Future. Where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. So this episode, folks, let's wind the clock back. Not real far, but to 1971. And what I have here is a clip, an interview from the founder of the Club of Rome. Yes, you've heard me talk about the Club of Rome on here, folks. You know, John Coleman's book, The Club of Rome and the Committee of 300. And folks, remind me, next week in the Ken's Corner update, I'll talk a little bit about that book. But now we hear about the World Economic Forum, and we hear about it over and over and over. But it had its origins back in 1971 and was accelerated by the influence of another NGO. And NGO stands for non-governmental organization. And these are the movers and the shakers behind the scenes, forming the opinions and the directions and the policies of our governments. You know, we've talked about the young global leaders from the World Economic Forum and how Trudeau and Merkel and even Putin are part of that. And wait till you hear that. That's coming up here next. But this group was one of the follow-up groups, and they got their start from the Bilderberg, and the Bilderberg got their starts from the Trilateral, and the Trilaterals got their starts from, and this goes on and on and on. So what I'd like to do right now is play this clip of an interview of Ariello Percy, one of the two founders of the Club of Rome. Now, it's a rather long clip, and the audio isn't very good, but this man says a mouthful. He talks about the peasants who move into the cities. You know, now they call them useless eaters, and they call these areas where we live the flyover country. So nothing's new. But listen to Ariello Percy, founder of the Club of Rome. This interview was from 1983. Just listen to what he's saying.
Hello, I'm here again today at the meeting of the Association for the Study of World Future Social Prospects. And I'm very lucky to have as a guest today Mr. Aurelio Percei, the founder of the Club of Rome, and somebody whom I consider is one of the first real world citizens. Tell me, Dr. Percei, why did you decide to come all the way here to Caracas to come to this meeting?
Well, the two topics, social progress and world solidarity, are very important and very near to my interests. World progress, social solidarity, are concepts which we should adapt in looking towards the future as this meeting is concerned with. We talk very much about economic development, technological development, very little of social or human development or progress. And that is the basis of everything, because it's the human being, the 4.5 billion people of the world, remain behindhand, lagging behind the other developments, there cannot be any good world. The system will be upset one day or the other. There will something which give way.
Yeah.
And we have to talk about the world, because the present system is a world system. Interdependencies are so great, so critical, among everything, everything else, regions among themselves. Problems among themselves, solutions among themselves, and with problems.
Yes.
Everything is interrelated. So we have to talk about the world much more than nation or continent.
Yes. There was a panel this morning on the whole question of urbanization, and you were making some very interesting observations about how mankind has become too arrogant and forgets their place in nature. Could you elaborate a little?
Let me just before say that so far we were very much preoccupied by rural backwardness, the problems of the rural populations around the world, which are key to the world situation. Now we have another preoccupation, the inflow of peasants from destitute rural areas into cities, into megalopolis even, is creating equal problems in the cities. So we have more worries today than we had 10 years ago. And in both cases, there is a divorce between man and nature. When we were discussing chiefly the situations in villages, in rural areas, it was people who were not any longer able to live with the natural environment, because they had depleted it due to poverty, to ignorance, to the bad application of new technologies, to the wrong systems of irrigation, and so on. And now these people have gone to the cities in an artificial environment. We have created something which was labeled this morning as monstrous, this megalopolis. The emblem of this monstrosity is Mexico City, which is now 17 million people, and it will become, at the end of the century, 30 million, 35 million. Nobody knows. That is, that city will be bigger than the whole of Venezuela, the country which hosts us. The population will be bigger than that of one continent, Australia, and all crammed in a small basin. So these are the new problems, and these are artificial problems created by man who has separated itself from a communion with nature.
And who is going to feed the people in all of these cities if we don't remember the land and make a new ethic?
That is a $64,000 question. Who is going to feed whom? Because if there is some food available, it will be first eaten by the peasants themselves. If they are not a military force requisitioned from the cities. Or if there is much food, say, in the United States, in the big agricultural exporting countries, food exporting countries, there will be no means of transport, no possibility of making it available to the poor people of the hungry countries, and these hungry people will not have the means to pay for it. So it is the whole of the system which has to be revised, reconceptualized. We have to consider that we have landed in this very difficult situation because we have advanced so fast in science and technology, and we have not been able to develop our cultural capacity of using the tools of science and technology. And now the situation is coming to a climax, probably ever greater crisis, some disaster here and there. But we have, and I insist on that, we have all the means, if we want, to steer away from this disastrous course and head towards a much better future. Yes. It is up to us.
And I think that you might agree with me that all of these problems are lessons in interdependence, lessons that we live on one world, we are one human family, and I want to ask you one last question, and that is, what lesson of interdependence can we learn from the present situation with the situation with OPEC, which is very important here in Venezuela because the Venezuelans invented OPEC, as you know, and the prices that will be paid for oil and the debt of the developing countries? Have we human family? Will this human family make this a creative learning experience in interdependence, or will we have a silly worldwide depression which is unnecessary?
First of all, a footnote. You know, Hazel, that I always agree with you also in this particular question. And I think that this is a learning experience. I don't know whether we will actually learn, but we have on the table before us all the elements to learn to behave differently, to adopt new policies and strategies, to steer away from this course that I said before, lead us only into greater trouble than today. There is not only the question of mismanagement of the oil resources and the whole of the OPEC mess, which is now surfacing because there is no more the boom. And everybody is in difficulty. This country and many others is equal to the mess that exists in the financial markets. We know that there are so many countries in the third world which are indebted much beyond their capacity to repay not only the capital, but only to service the interest. And this situation, even if we stop it for the moment, it's becoming worse in the short term. On the long term, will continue to be like that. Again, if we don't find a new solidarity, a new mutuality, a commonality of interests that we will serve in good faith, in self-interest, in life, in self-interest on the long term, and if we don't change, then I think that the 80s will be a very difficult turning point towards worse situations worldwide.
Yes.
And we all, particularly the rich ones, I'm talking now to my friends in the United States, particularly the rich ones, the powerful ones, will have to suffer more than the poor ones, which have been accustomed to suffer all their lives and their parents and their grandparents' lives.
Yes. You know, it's interesting because I remember saying several years ago that there already is a new international economic order.
Yes.
Because all of the Northern Hemisphere banks lend all of this money to these developing countries. And, you know, bankers say, if I lend you $100, it's my problem. But if I lend you $100 million, it's my problem.
Certainly.
You know, and so now it is the tables are already turned.
Yes, yes.
And this, I believe, will lead to some kind of creative change in the international monetary arrangement.
I think so. I think so.
Yes.
There is some piecemeal international order and general disorder.
Yes.
We are living in a world where the financial markets, the monetary system, the economic cooperation, everything which is on the interface between nations is going to pieces. It is not any longer being able to withstand the onslaught of new problems, of new exigencies, so many more problems, so many more people. And to say again what I said before, we can, but we must find new ways of living together, the 4.5 billion people of today, and prepare the ground for the 6 billion people who will inhabit this small, impoverished planet in less than 20 years from now.
And so last of all, would you agree this is why we need more organizations like this one that we are delegates at today?
Yes. And like the Club of Rome.
And like the Club of Rome. Of also, yes, a leader. Thank you. Thank you.
Folks, I don't even know where to start here. Did you hear that woman? What do we need to do for our one world? Our one human family? Interdependence. You know, this is a lie, folks, from the pits of hell. This is the brotherhood of man, the fatherhood of God, the human family. And then did you hear all the economic? What do I keep telling you? The World Economic Forum. Did you know that Putin spoke at the World Economic Forum a few years ago and he essentially said what Perse just said? Perse, or however you say his name. This man we just listened to for 11 minutes. He said all the systems are coming apart. Folks, this is a scam. You know, the truth is that freedom is derived from the Declaration of Independence. Well, freedom is derived from God. And the Declaration of Independence recognizes that, as did some of its source documents like the Magna Carta. But it goes even further back than that. This is all called common law or natural law, God's law, you know. This goes all the way back to Genesis, and then you have the Hammurabi Code and all that stuff. These are the sources of the protection of we the people against what I'll call the lizard people, the Nakash, you know, the Nephilim, the baddies. But most men and women are actually worshiping a god who isn't Jehovah Elohim, the creator god. They're actually worshiping the devil. And when they pray, they don't really know it, but they're not praying to Jehovah Elohim. They're praying to the devil and the enemies of mankind. So I'm telling you, folks, this doesn't just go back to 1971. This goes back much further. In fact, it goes all the way back to Genesis 4, where Cain killed his brother Abel. And then Genesis 5, where we read about all Cain's villainous offspring. You know, you have Tubal Cain, and then you have all of these bad people. And there's a good book out there by Eustace Mullins. It's titled The Curse of Canaan, a Demonology of History. I've talked about it on the show before. And it's a classic. It's like the Book of Esther that we're going to wrap this up with. It's a classic story of good versus evil. Now, modern history wants to disguise the presence of evil here on earth and make light of it and try to convince us that evil is to be tolerated. You know, we need to treat them with understanding. We need to go along to get along. We need to negotiate. But I'm telling you that under no circumstances can you negotiate with evil. Evil must be forcibly opposed and blotted out. They're using the Hegelian dialectic against us, you know, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And that's basically what we call liberalism today, or secular humanism. You know, the popular, apparently sensible appeal to humanity, like we heard her saying, you know, we're all one big family. No, folks, the human heart is deceitfully wicked, and who shall know it? Only the Lord God. And it's only when we get a heart transplant from the Lord Jesus Christ and we become a new creation, a new creature, can we truly understand. You know, the problem is this very humanistic tendency we have, you know, to be selfish, to be stubborn, to be stupid. And I'm telling you, this humanistic bent, this mindset goes all the way back to the biblical curse of Canaan. And humanism is the logical result of demonology in history. Modern day events can be understood only if we trace their implications all the way back in a direct line to the earliest records of antiquity. And that's what we need to do. I'm telling you, folks, if you start to look at history as not accidental, not incidental, but deliberate, his story, the story of the Lord Jesus Christ and the plan for our salvation, I'm telling you, from Cain to Tubal Cain and all the other ites in the Bible, you know, in Genesis 15, verses 19 through 21, they talk about the Kenites and the Kezites and the Cabanites and the Hittites and the Pezites and the Raphaims and the Amorites and the Canaanites, and you know about the Canaanites. There were also the Girgashites and the Jebusites. And then that led to the Jewish cabal, you know, with the Pharisees, Sadducees, and Herodians. And remember the woes that Jesus leveled upon them? And then we have the Vatican and the Roman Catholic cabal and all their serpent and Luciferian worship. And then wind the clock up to the 1700s and Adam Weisskopf and the Illuminati. And then we have the Freemasons. And then the Club of Rome, but before the Club of Rome and the World Economic Forum, which it spawned, we had the Bilderbergers and the Trilateralists, and there were these groups over in England back at the turn of the 20th century. And I just forgot their name, folks. And then even back at the time of the founding of this nation, Benjamin Franklin and the Hellfire Society, these were all groups that were perpetuating this humanistic bent that came from the very pit of hell and Cain himself as he murdered his brother Abel. So now let's wind the clock ahead and see how this applies to today and what's actually happening. So I want to go to 2017 now, and we're going to have this little clip from Klaus Schwab where he talks about his wonderful group, the Young Global Leaders. And just listen to this one-minute clip.
When I mention our names, like this Merkel, Vladimir Putin and so on, they all have been young global leaders of the World Economic Forum.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are very proud of now, the young generation, like Prime Minister Trudeau, President of Argentina and so on, that we penetrate the cabinets. So yesterday I was at a reception for Prime Trudeau, and I know that half of this cabinet, or even more, half of this cabinet are actually young global leaders of the World Economic Forum.
And that's true in Argentina. Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's true in Argentina as well.
It's true in Argentina, and it's true in France now. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the president, with a young global leader, but what is important?
What? That's right, Paul. Did you hear that? Even Putin was in it. I don't know if you caught that part, folks, but let's play it again.
When I mention our names, like this Merkel, even Vladimir Putin and so on, they all have been young global leaders of the World Economic Forum.
Mm-hmm.
They all have been young global leaders of the World Economic Forum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Jesus said something, knew he was going to speak something that was important, he repeated it. That's why I repeated that. So even Putin is part of the graduate class of the young economic or the global economic leaders from the World Economic Forum. Now, a lot of people in the alternative media and the liberty movement, they falsely believe that Russia is anti-globalist. Folks, there's nothing further from the truth. even the political leaders like Putin, these dictators who sometimes use anti-globalistic rhetoric, they have relationships that tell the true story. He's a graduate of the Young Global Leaders Economic Group. And the quote that you heard the founder of the Club of Rome say about the systems are falling apart, Putin just said that at a recent Davos summit from the WEF. The very words. I'm going to see if I can find that clip. Of course, maybe he did speak in English. I don't know if he does speak in English. In Putin's first autobiography titled First Person, he talks about the fondness of his first encounter with the New World Order's globalist leader, Henry Kissinger. Now, this is back when he was a former member of the SSB, the KGB. Oh, so Putin rose through the political ranks and maintained a steady friendship with Kissinger. And I have pictures on the screen showing Kissinger and Putin. And there have been lunches and brunches, even in the Kremlin, with Henry Kissinger. But, folks, it doesn't stop there. Putin and the Kremlin have also kept a steady dialogue with the World Economic Forum. I've got pictures of him there and quotes that he said. Russia's in on this industrial revolution. In fact, that's what the BRIC nations are all about. Folks, do not be deceived. Now, yes, this is dangerous, and yes, this is evil, but it's part of it. It's kabuki theater, folks. I'm telling you, it's kabuki theater. So there is this great war going on, and it's a classic war of good versus evil. And I'd like to end this with the story of Esther. Now, in this entire book of the Bible, God's not mentioned once, and I'll get into that later. Now, it opens up with a king's pride-filled celebration of his godhood, okay? And this was King Ahasuerus or King Xerxes. He sat on the throne, which was in Shushan, his palace. Now, there are three main characters in this. Haman, the bad guy. Mordecai, the good guy. The stepfather of Esther, who was by a series of circumstances. She was a Jewish, so a Hebrew, but she became the queen. Now, remember these three people, Esther, her stepdad or cousin Mordecai, who raised her, and the bad guy, Haman, queen. So I want to wind ahead to Esther chapter 3, verses 8 through 11. And Haman said unto the king, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all the people. Neither keep they the king's laws, whether it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have the charge of the business to bring it into the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of the Hammedath, the Agite. There's another one of those ites, folks, the Jew's enemy. And the king said to Haman, the silver is given to thee and the people also to do to them as it seemeth good to thee. So I'm telling you, Haman has it out for the Hebrews. He hates the Jews. He's one of these ites. He's an Agagite. And then he got the king to agree to make the people bow down to him and worship him. And he made the king agree to persecute the Jews. But Esther's cousin, her stepdad, Mordecai, refused to do all the stuff because he was a faithful believer and he wouldn't do it. I'm telling you, folks, this is a classic battle of good versus evil. And it's really a battle between Jesus and Satan. Jesus said in John chapter 7, verse 10, verily, verily, so he's repeating it, truly, truly, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep, and all that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to kill and steal and destroy. And I have come that might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. Now, like my pastor Todd said last week, and this is where I was inspired from his sermon last week. He said, there are a lot of bad shepherds out there who eat their sheep, and big amen to that. A lot of these churches are nothing but corruption. But Jesus is the good shepherd who laid down his life for his sheep. And I'm telling you, there are a lot of good pastors out there like mine who would do the same thing. Now, there are some tools used by the enemy to kill, steal, and destroy. Things like lies, fear, unforgiveness, bitterness, unbelief. On the top of that list right now, I'd have to say there's fear. But Jesus said, I have come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. Now, this battle between good and evil is played out in every generation. Just like I told you, these baddies go all the way back to Cain when he slew Abel in Genesis chapter 4. And we have all these different non-governmental organizations through the ages that have perpetuated the lie. So this battle is played out in every generation. And Haman is the baddie, a prototype of the devil in this particular story. And Mordecai is the good guy. And Esther comes along as the savior, the hero. And in this case, I'd say like my pastor did, that we are cast in that role. So we have a role, we have a purpose in God's story, his story, history. And the question is, will you accept it? Now that's where my pastor ended it, but I'm going to add, or are you too afraid? Folks, will you take this to heart, or are you just going to pay lip service to it? No, folks. I want you to be challenged by it, okay? The Bible says in Esther chapter 4 that when Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on a sackcloth with ashes and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud voice and a bitter cry. You know, Haman plotted against the Hebrews, but now Esther is queen. And, you know, after Esther became queen, Mordecai never really saw her face to face, but they exchanged letters. And in verses 4 through 5 of chapter 4, it says that Esther's handmaids and chamberlains came and told her. Then the queen was exceedingly grieved, and she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai and to take away his sackcloth from him, but he received it not. Then he called Esther for Hatak, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a command to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. Now, remember, Mordecai was her stepdad. Her parents had died when she was young, so Mordecai raised her. So the tone that he's communicating to her with here is one of a father. So Mordecai told him, that's the chamberlain Hatak, to get this message back to Esther. So he told him all that happened unto him and the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay for the king's from the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. And he gave him a copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy the Jews. And he asked him to show it to Esther and to declare it unto her and to charge her that she should go unto the king and make supplication unto him and to make request before him for her people. Remember, she was a Jewess. So she became aware of the problem through these messages sent between the two. You know, her stepdad Mordecai and herself. And then Esther spake unto Hatak the messenger and gave him commandment unto Mordecai, saying, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whatsoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king in the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his, and that is to be put to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come unto the king for these past 30 days. So she's thinking, boy, if I go and do what my stepdad Mordecai is saying to do, I could be killed. And there's stress right now as she's trying to make a decision. So her stepdad Mordecai is telling her to go and talk to the king and tell him the evil that's being perpetrated upon the people by Haman. Yet she's feeling insecure and afraid. But she wants to secure the welfare of her people. Have you ever been in a situation like that? Have you ever been challenged like that? Folks, we're living that right now. Right now, folks. And who knows whether you have obtained royalty for such a time as this, for this very purpose, to wake people up, to stand up and say no, to say no in the face of this diabolical evil, folks. You need to stand and say no. You can't play it safe. And Esther, in this story, was in that situation. And it reminds me of what the truckers went through. It reminds me of what's happening right now as we try to stand against all these diabolical, evil things that are being foisted upon us. So don't forget the Great Commission. Don't forget who you are in Jesus Christ. Don't forget that you're supposed to be spreading the good news of the gospel everywhere you go. Don't forget that you can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. Don't forget that greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. Don't forget these things, folks. And Mordecai said, you know, that you're going to have all kinds of issues. You were perhaps in this position of royalty for a time such as this. And then finally, I want to wrap this up with one other point. Avoiding risk doesn't keep you safe, folks. What it actually does is make you hopeless. And when Pastor Todd shared that, I just had this light bulb go off in my head. You know, everything we do in hope, in faith, avoids risk. Remember, the Bible says hope deferred makes the heart grow weary. And the key verse, which I've shared several times, is Esther chapter 4, verse 14. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, that means do nothing, just go along to get along, keep the status quo, then shall there be enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Wow, folks, no excuses. You need to apply this to your life right now. I'm encouraging to do that, folks. Just don't say no. Don't avoid saying no. Say no. Did you know God isn't mentioned once in this entire book? There's no mention of prophets, no reading of other scriptures cited, nothing. So how often do you say, well, okay, I'll do God with a big from the sky? The thing is that we don't get from God. You know? Now, can't you? Yeah, that's what a bad thing can do. But it's what they control. And I'm out of time. It's going to say that we give in.
Never give in. Never give in. Never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
Just to know you and to make you know me.
You know, folks, I looked at the clock and there's a few minutes left, and I just want to encourage you. Yeah, we don't always get a sign from God. But I'm telling you, if we step out in faith and recognize that we should never defer hope or our hearts will go weary, there are just times when we have to trust in Him and stand on what He already told us. Now, that doesn't mean that God never talks to us. He does. But never forget this promise from God. It says in Hebrews chapter 13, verses 5 through 6, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For He hath said, I will never leave thee, I will never forsake thee. For that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do to me." And I'm telling you, folks, man can do a lot of things. Read Hebrews 12. You can be sawn asunder like one of the prophets was. You can be decapitated like St. Paul was. You could be crucified upside down like Peter was. But fear not the one who can destroy your bodies. Fear the one who can destroy your soul. And I just want to read this from Esther chapter 4, verses 15 through 17. "Then Esther bade them return Mordecai with this answer, Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, day or night. I also and my maidens will fast likewise. And so will I go out unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him." Now notice here it says fast, but it doesn't mention pray. But I believe they did pray. Now why is God not mentioned in this? Why isn't prayer mentioned here? Well, I believe, as my pastor did, that God may be trying to teach us obedience even when we don't hear from Him. Have you ever been in that situation? You're convicted you need to do something, and yet you don't hear from God. Now, most of us never face life or death situations. It's a matter of convenience versus inconvenience, peace versus unrest, you know, happiness versus strife. There are times when we just have to recognize that we got to get out of our comfort level. That's what I'm trying to say, folks. You know, hope is always on the other side of obedience. And folks, I'm telling you, it's time to dream again. It's time to stand up and say no to these Luciferians. You know, in the end, the Jews were spared. And Haman and his family are the ones who were hung. Did you know that? So don't give up, folks. I know everything looks dire, and it looks like these could be the end times. But I'm going to ask you a question. What the Lord defers? What if He's testing us? So I'm telling you, this story is true, and it applies to you and me today. There's coming a time when we're all going to need hope, and we're going to have to trust and obey. But there are no guarantees to the outcome. Just be bold. And like Winston Churchill said, never give in, no, never. Let's replay that song from Casting Crowns, Thrive. I love you all, folks, and provided we're still here next week, we'll have another message. I love you.
Many a dream has died. Like a tree planted by the water, we never will run dry. So living water flowing through, God, we thirst for more of You. Fill our hearts and flood our souls with one desire, just we
to know our Father's heart. Into the world we're reaching out to show them who you are. So living water flowing through, God, we thirst for more of you. Fill our hearts and flood our souls with one desire, just to know you and to make you know me. Lift your name on high, shine like the sun, make darkness run and hide. We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life. It's time for us to more than just
to know you and to make you know.